I don't think there are any other adjustments to the agenda. So, Heidi, would you like to tell us about the disclosure of interests?
Great. And do we need to open up for start the recording? Is it recording now? I can't remember.
It's already recording.
Okay, good. I can never keep it straight. All right. Well, this is Heidi Bosley. I am Senior Director here at Performance Measures at NQF. And thank you, all of you, for agreeing to participate on this panel. We're very excited to get your input. If we could just go through everyone who is on the phone of the panel members and just provide just a brief background and then also any disclosures that you may feel need to disclose related to this project. So why don't we start with, and I'll go down the list alphabetically, I think Jennifer Beaumont, you were sitting in for Dr. Bassett.
I'm here for Lauren Lent, actually, and
okay.
Dr. Sella. I'm Jennifer Beaumont. I'm here on behalf of Facet.org, the developers of the FACT and Facet instruments. I'm actually a statistician at Northwestern University and have been involved in a lot of the development and validation of many of these measures. So
great.
Hopefully
Thank
I will
you.
Be able to answer questions.
Great. Okay, then Lee, would you like to start?
Sure, I'm Lee Newcomer, the chair of the committee. My role is I'm the leader of the oncology division at United Healthcare, and I'm also a director at Park Nicollet Clinic. I don't think I've got any conflicts or interests here that I would be germane to this discussion.
Okay. The next person I have from the panel is Dr. Fries.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Chris Fries. I'm an assistant professor at the University of Michigan. Faculty in the School of Nursing at the Comprehensive Cancer Center, and I'm a health services researcher.
Great. Dr. Gooden?
Hi, yes. My name is Susan Gooden. I'm a professor of medicine at the Robert Wood Johnson Medical School and associate director at the Cancer Institute of New Jersey, which is an NCI-designated comprehensive cancer center. I am a pharmacist by training, and I don't think I have nothing to disclose.
Okay. Is Pat Hagen on now? Huh. Okay. Let me go down then. Dr. Penson?
Yeah, I'm David Penson. I'm a professor of urologic surgery here at Vanderbilt University. I also am the director of our Center for Surgical Quality and Outcomes Research. I'm a urologic oncologist, and I devote about half to three-quarters of my time to health services research. I have no disclosures that are relevant.
Thanks. Dr. Teschendorf?
Hi, I'm Bonnie Teschendorf. I work in patient-reported outcomes at Johnson & Johnson Pharmaceuticals, and I don't have any conflicts.
Thank you. Did I miss anyone else from the panel?
Yeah, Susan Beck.
Great.
I'm Susan Beck. I'm a professor at the University of Utah College of Nursing, and I've been a volunteer on a project that's developing performance measures related to breast cancer that are to nursing that is being conducted by the Oncology Nursing Society and the Joint Commission.
Great, thank you.
And Bill Putnam.
Great.
Bill Putnam, I'm a professor and chair of thoracic surgery at Vanderbilt and have been interested and worked on quality improvement efforts through the institutions where I've been and also through the Society of Thoracic Surgeons and their national database efforts.
So you Vanderbilt surgeons do a lot of health services research. It's pretty good. That's cool.
We're trying.
Good.
Got a big biomedical informatics department here as well.
Okay. All right, Heidi. Anything else we need to do before we start going through these measures?
I had a few slides prepared to just run through the project again because I think it has been a while since you've received an update on that, and then walk us through the criteria just a little bit.
Okay. Now, the last orientation I saw took 60 minutes, so I assume this one will be 5 to 10?
Yes, you are correct.
Perfect. Thanks, Heidi. Okay.
So, yeah, and I just, operator, I just got an email from Pat. She's
Patrick.
Having issue with coming in, Pat Hagen.
Yeah. Patrick's our operator.
Okay, I think she was already on the call a second ago. Would you like for me to dial out to her?
Let me send her an email and just tell her to dial back in, and then let's see if that works.
Okay, thank you.
All right. So, trying to multitask here. Let me run just quickly through the slides, and we'll send this out to everyone so you can have this for your background material. Just wanted to spend a couple minutes framing this project again because you are one panel of several. It's a multi-phase project, and then run through the sub-criteria. So, Hawa, if we could just skip down through. I think everyone's familiar with NQF.
Oh, I might be.
Pat, is that you? This is Heidi.
Hello, can you hear me? This is Pat Haugen.
We can hear you.
Yeah, I have been on for 10-plus minutes, and they have not been able to connect, and I've had to call back a couple times, so I don't know if anyone else has had trouble, because I tried to answer. I was here, and that line wasn't live.
Okay, so we have you now, which is great.
We do have a quorum, Pat. Were you able to hear all the disclosures of interest?
No.
Okay, suffice it to say there were none, so I think we'll just keep going ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Okay, and Pat, did you have any background you want to give yourself or disclosures?
I had no disclosures,
okay.
No.
Great, okay, I apologize for the difficulty. Hawa, if you could go to slide 13, right where you were. Okay, again, so the Outcomes Project is funded by Health and Human Services, and we were asked to look at the top 20 Medicare conditions, and of course cancer being one of the primary ones there. What we really wanted to do was see what there was out there in outcomes measures. Some panels actually don't have any measures. For example, eye care, there were none submitted, but others do. You all have quite a few to look at today. The goal is to expand NQF's current portfolio on outcomes measures. For the most part, we have process measures to date. So you can go to the next one, Hawa. Okay, so this again just gives you a sense of this overall project. There's three phases. Phase one and phase two have been combined, and you all are functioning within phase two technically. But as you can see, we have several groups looking at measures, looking at topics. One of the things that we would like to do, or we probably will not get a chance to do today, so we will reconvene you by phone for a brief call, is to identify gaps in care, but that's what everyone else has been asked to do. Phase three includes mental health and child health, and they're just starting up. Project goals, please. Okay. So, again, it really is to identify what outcomes measures are out there that are suitable for public reporting and quality improvement, looking at cross-cutting as well as the 20 areas, and to identify gaps. You could go, yep, to the next one. So, as you all may be aware, NQF operates under a formal consensus development process, and really looking at multi-stakeholder membership and input. That's why you have consumers and purchasers as well as healthcare professionals on these panels and the steering committees. And again, we're looking for measures that are appropriate for public reporting and quality improvement. Now, if we go to the next slide, we wanted to just give you a visual of where you fit within this process. So it is looking at the project, outcomes project. There is an overall steering committee. Lee sits on that. All the panel chairs sit on that to provide input and continuity from the panels to the steering committee. You all are serving as advisors. And so you are doing a critical piece of the work, which is really evaluating the measures based on the sub-criteria that the NQF has within our overall criteria. We'll get into that a little bit more specifically on the next slide. So why don't we skip that one? Yeah. Okay, so there's, go down to the project timeline, please, 23. So just so you know where we are in the process, the technical advisory panels have been meeting. We had hoped to have it done in January through March and mainly in February, but as all of you know, the snowstorms really threw us off a little bit. Our main steering committee will be meeting April 20th and 21st, so the work that you do today will go to that steering committee, and they will put forward final recommendations based on your input and their review. We'll go out for member and public comment in June, and we anticipate having this project done by October or November. So if we skip down, I really want to spend just a little time on the evaluation piece. So if you go to 27, slide 27, Hawa, thank you. So there are four criteria that NQF has on evaluating the measures. The first one is importance to measure. Second is scientific acceptability of the measure properties, usability, and feasibility. So I'm going to rather quickly walk through it, but please stop me if you have a question. because this is really what you're going to spend your time doing now. So if we go to the next slide. So on importance to measure and report, this is the one criteria that is a must pass. So all of you must feel that it meets the criteria, the three components here. Otherwise, if it does not, we actually will recommend you don't move forward on evaluating it further. It's something that the NQF board, as well as the Consensus Standards Approval Committee, feels the most critical piece when first evaluating the measure. So when you look at the criteria, it breaks down into three sub-criteria. First, is it related to an NQF priority in a high impact area? Does the evidence support the measure focus? And then, is there an opportunity for improvement? So these are the three sub-criteria we will ask you to go through in the next 2 hours. If we go down to slide 30, yep. The next one, once you've evaluated on importance, is scientific acceptability. And again, here we're looking at, are the specifications precise? Can others implement this measure as it's specified? Is there information on testing, reliability, validity, and discrimination? Is that information adequate enough for you to evaluate how this measure would perform based on the testing results provided? And risk adjustment is one thing. You have risk adjustment with one of the measures, not with the others, so I don't know that it's going to be a key thing that you'll talk about. And then the other piece is exclusion. So are the exclusions appropriate? Does it make sense? And how if any, has the testing shown that they are indeed applicable? So if we go to the next one, usability. So this is a third criteria. And there we're really looking to see, have they provided evidence that the measure results are meaningful and understandable as intended? Are they useful for public reporting and also for informing quality improvement? So that is one thing that we will ask you to take a look at, is are these measures appropriate for public reporting? If it's just for quality improvement, typically that's not what we see, but if that is the case, you all will be asked to provide a rating on that. And then the last one is feasibility. And that, again, is the extent to which the required data are readily available, retrievable without undue burden, and that sometimes is difficult, but we're asking you to evaluate that, and can it be implemented? So we'll run through the criteria for each of the measures, ask you to provide that information. If we could go down, because, again, I don't want to spend much time. I think, actually, Lee, unless there's something else, I would stop, and we can just run through maybe the first measure and see if anyone has questions.
So, Heidi, with those four criteria, you want us to either assess whether it's a complete, a partial, or a did not meet?
Correct.
So we're going to be, as we go through each of those four criteria for each measure, ultimately I'll be asking you to give me one of those three votes. Either it's complete, it's partial, or did not meet. We'll tally them up and see where we are. Are there any questions from the rest of the group? I'm going to take that as we're ready to go to work. So let's look at 0210, imaging timeliness of care time between diagnostic mammogram and needle core biopsy. And Pat, I know that you took a look at this, as did Lauren Bassett, who today is now, I'm blocking here, Jennifer Beaumont. And Jennifer, are you prepared to make some comments also for Lauren?
No, I'm unrelated to this topic.
Okay, so Pat, would you like to chip in on the first part? And that is, let's spend just a two seconds describing this measure. This is, as you can read, the time and business days required between the diagnostic mammogram, which identified a lesion, and the day the needle core biopsy was performed. So Pat, would you like to take us through your thoughts about importance?
Okay, my perspective on this, although timeliness of services that is important to patients and delays can create anxiety, as I looked at this measure as it was presented, I had some questions. As I understand this measure, there's a recommendation of a guideline of 19 days for reporting. At least that's the way I read it here.
That's
and
correct.
Am I correct?
Mm-hmm. I think you are.
And that this is, you know, as the survey of various providers, that there's variance from, you know, a few days to obviously larger than 19 days. But, you know, my view is there is no evidence that this timeliness does impact survival. So it may impact an anxiety outcome or some level of, you know, of that within that window as the woman is or individual is going through diagnosis, but there is no evidence for impact on survival. And maybe a delay in that may represent other delays in medical care. There is no evidence for the recommendation of 19 days as in a guideline, and I don't think from a public reporting standpoint that this would be helpful to patients or to people assessing providers or quality of care to say, you know, 19 days is good, 20 days is bad, 18 days is better. I just don't think this is a meaningful measure. I don't think if you would ask patients that 19 days would represent their view of timeliness to most patient, and if a timeliness measure is to be considered, I think it should be much shorter and based on evidence. So although, you know, the intent is good to make certain that patients, you know, when that abnormal mammogram is communicated to the patient that there's, you know, a timely response for the next step. But I did not, I was not enthusiastic about this measure the way it was presented.
So I was the other reviewer, and I'll make a couple comments, and then we'll open it up. And actually, Pat, I was incorrect. They report out the actual number of days for each center. They've recommended 19 as a guideline, but the actual measure is the number of days from abnormal mammogram to diagnostic biopsy.
Yeah, as I kind of thought about that, you know, if that wasn't, but then I don't know, I still don't know how that would help inform the public, you know, is two days as good, is 6 days bad, is eight, or I still have some questions on this as far as how important this is.
Actually, I'm also going to make the same statement. The authors of this measure already said that it does not affect medical outcome. It's in their text. They didn't give any evidence that anxiety affected patients. There just isn't any literature there. And whereas I think we can all be sympathetic to the anxiety that's related there, I'm not sure how much that's impacted by shortness. There's no evidence to support that a shorter time would relieve anxiety at all. And so I, too, question whether or not this measure was important. I'll leave it at that. Do we have comments from any other reviewers?
This is Susan Beck, and this literature isn't actually reported in the measure, but I had a doctoral student who did an analysis in Tennessee looking at these types of delays, and there were health disparities associated with the type of delays. Now, whether or not that then relates to the disparities in outcomes that occur is not known, but I just thought I would add that piece of information.
So when you say there are health disparities, can you give some examples?
Yeah,
you mean the people had a worse outcome?
Well, they had greater delays. Hispanics and African Americans had greater delays.
Looking at
their state cancer control database is what they valued. It was just recently published, so you know, probably didn't even make the deadline for getting into the.
Hello.
Yes, just introduce yourself, please, before your comment.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Kerry Kaufman. I was on some sort of mute before. But I got them to put me off. I had sent them some. I'm one of the authors here, and I'm not sure that 19 days. I don't see where it is in there, but I don't think we were implying that a 19-day is a magic number. I think one of the things that we were looking at from this is from the National Consortium of Breast Centers is that there are about 1.6 million breast biopsies. I said 1.2 million, but somewhere between, there's a large number of women who undergo breast biopsies per year, of which only a 20% or less are cancer. But all of these women think they might have cancer. and this is a paperwork that I submitted this yesterday, and the anxiety is published, the degree of anxiety waiting for the procedure is published in a couple articles that I include on this supplemental information. And
did the anxiety decrease if there was less time?
Right. And, well, the anxiety decreased after the procedure.
After procedure, but
and so the
okay.
length of and when you there are there is and if that is more pertinent to making the decision, I can get a better literature review of the anxiety issues. But many women in some of the health outcomes data, psychological health outcomes data in the past has supported that the time of unknowing, the time of not knowing whether it's positive or negative is the most stressful time. It led us to the and that time is ended once the biopsy is known. The other thing is there's no relationship to survival, but I think the Institute of Medicine underscored the fact that we can't just look at morbidity and mortality factors of and I'm talking to preaching to the choir, but the quality of care, that care is timeliness, is in patient-centeredness, is a component that we should be looking at, and that's where these are coming from. They're not coming from morbidity, mortality type of improvements.
Okay, thank you. Any other from the voting panelists? Any other comments?
Just one general comment, Bill Putnam. I was noticing that, you know, that often you'll have diagnosis with mammogram at one institution and biopsy at another. And in the text, it talks about that that a measure would enhance coordination between providers. And I'm not clear as to how that would work out, particularly when institutions are often unrelated and have, and may have different missions.
Right.
So could that be addressed?
Yes, I'd like to. This is Carrie Kaufman again. Breast cancer care is almost entirely outpatient, and patients go from one facility to another, radiation here, medical oncology there, and most of those facilities are not integrated, whether it be by medical records or by financial modalities. That's one of the reasons where breast cancer care has delayed in establishing appropriate quality metrics. If an individual knows, just like we have in a hospital, if one specialty needs another specialty to cooperate, those connections are made. If the facility knows that patient coming from facility B is coming to facility A, knows that there is someone watching over the back, there is a timeliness concern, then they're going to not prioritize. Or they will prioritize these particular patients. And so that's what the thought was, that it would enhance collaboration amongst sometimes competing facilities because they're both, it would shine negatively on both of them.
Carrie, this is Lee again. I'm going to defer part of this discussion to feasibility and your measurements, but who is the number attributed to, the mammogram unit or the biopsy unit entity?
It would be the biopsy unit.
Okay. Okay. Does that answer your question, Bill?
Yes, but that really puts an undue burden on the surgeon or the proceduralist, because there may be delay in terms of when the mammogram was done to when the mammogram results are made available to the woman, to when the schedule is made, to when the biopsy is performed.
One of the desires of these components is that you include several steps along the way. We could suggest only when the mammogram report comes out, or which is already established on ACR guidelines. But this does underscore the team effort, the integration of care, and it does count all those points.
Can I jump in for a minute?
And who am I talking? Who's talking?
This is David Penson.
Yes, David.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I think all of Bill's points are well taken, but even before that, I think the first reviewer's comment, and I'm sensitive to the fact this does reduce patient anxiety, but by the same token, it has no effect on mortality. And in fact, we're setting the bar, I think, unfairly very high given all the other problems. So I personally question the importance of this.
Any other comments?
I would just like you to look at the very end.
I'm sorry. Identify yourself, please.
I'm sorry. It's Kerry Kaufman.
Kerry, I'm going to actually cut you off on that because you're not voting at this point. There wasn't a direct question. I'm sorry to be a Robert's Rule of Order guy here, but we got to get through them. So any other comments or questions from our voting members? Doesn't sound like it. Let's just go through. I'm going to take the list that I have in front of me, which isn't alphabetical. So I need from each of you a complete, a partial, or did not meet on importance. Bill Putnam?
Did not meet.
This is Heidi. Can we go through the impact gap, each of those pieces, and have people do it? It takes a little longer, but I need it on the impact, the gap, and the relation to the outcomes.
Oh, you're kidding me.
I'm sorry. That's what they've asked the panels to do, is the sub-criteria.
Impact, gap, and what was the third one?
Relation to outcomes.
Relation
I'm sorry.
To outcomes. And let's talk about gap just a little bit. Gap, expand on that again.
So is there a demonstrated gap in performance? So HAWA has that up right now.
Is there a gap in performance, which this group
Correct.
Did demonstrate well, if
Correct.
We need to be specific about that. So HAWA, you have it on the
She has it up.
You have it up? Okay.
Yes.
Just for all members who may not recall that data, they showed a wide variation, 0 to 33 days, with percentiles that I can't remember the 10th and 9th, but there was at least 2 weeks difference between the two. All right, we will take each criteria. This is going to be painful. All right. Bill, could I have your vote on impact, please?
Partially achieved.
Partial, okay. And Jennifer Beaumont?
I don't believe I'm voting.
So Jennifer, just so I'm sure, you are with one of the measure developer organizations, is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, I'm here for the
okay.
Fact L, Fact B. Fact
okay,
B.
I'm sorry, we must have missed that. So Jennifer will just speak up when we discuss the FACT okay. measures.
Jennifer, thanks for being honest. I appreciate that. Chris Reeves?
I say minimally.
You have a choice between complete, partial, and did not meet.
Oh, I thought there's an M for minimally.
Not that I was told about. Heidi, did that change?
Let me see. I may be wrong because I apologize. Yes, I'm sorry, Lee. It is. I missed the M, the minimally. Yes, my fault. So it's completely, partially, minimally, or not at all.
And this is on impact, so my vote is minimally.
Okay. And Susan Goodman?
Minimally.
David Pynchon?
Partially.
And Bonnie Testor?
Did not.
Did not. Okay. I'm sorry. It's Teschendorf. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I'm sorry. I apologize for that. And my vote is minimum. We will next go to gap in performance. Bill?
This is Susan Beck. I didn't get to vote.
Oh, Susan, I'm sorry.
And do you want mine? This is Pat, the final
yeah,
on mine.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was trying to multitask with too many things. Susan, your vote, please.
Minimal.
And Pat?
Minimal.
Okay. Next is gap in performance. Bill?
Minimal.
Chris?
Partial.
Susan?
Minimal.
David?
Partial.
Bonnie?
Partial.
Susan?
Partial.
I'm sorry, we have two Susans. So Susan Beck and Pat Haugen?
Partial.
And I actually will do a complete. And relation to outcomes is our next criteria. Bill Putnam?
Did not meet.
Chris Reeves?
Did not meet.
Susan Gooden?
Did not meet.
David Pynchon?
Did not meet.
Bonnie Teschendorf?
Did not meet.
Susan Beck?
Did not meet.
Pat Haugen?
Did not meet.
And I am a did not meet. Okay. The next category that we go to on this is the scientific criteria. Pat, do you have comments for us about that?
Okay, let me... I here? Going from page to page here with this
Lee,
form.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
I just don't understand the process. I thought that if it did not meet the that first measure of importance, that it was done.
Well, you raise a good point.
Right.
Heidi?
Yeah, let me give you a summary of what we had on the first one. So for impact, it was two partials. Five minimally met and one did not meet. The gap was one complete, five partials, and two minimally. And then everyone agreed it didn't meet the outcomes. I don't know that this would pass the importance criteria. So what we can do is, if there's anything that we want to specifically highlight with the other criteria, we can discuss that. But at this point, I think we can just take your recommendation on the importance to the steering committee. And then if they have questions, we can circle back with you all. But I don't know that we really need you to move forward on this unless there's something someone specifically wants to talk about further with the criteria.
Let me open the floor then and just ask if there were any specific comments on any of the three remaining areas, scientific usability or feasibility. I have one I'd like to register. The coding that was recommended in this was all in the CMS 1500 or CPT-4 series. And a number of these procedures are often billed from facilities on hospital billing with only revenue codes. And the revenue codes were not addressed in this measure. It was, I think, envisioned that all the coding would come from physicians and facilities, i.e. providers. But if the code could also be used by payers, and if so, we would need to have the information about facility revenue codes that would be appropriate as well. Any other comments? Bill, with your permission, I think we ought to also register your comments here about under perhaps feasibility, the fact that I think you made some comments about how if there were multiple centers provided, this would be difficult data to collect. Not impossible, but there were multiple sources of data that would have to be looked at, unless you were all under one roof.
That's correct. And, well, there are multiple time points for when the clock would start ticking. Is it when the mammogram is performed, when the mammogram is read, or when the patient receives the information?
I think the rule writers were pretty clear about that. They started the clock ticking when the day of the mammogram, and they ended the clock the day the pathologist read the slide using billing codes. So that's how they set it up.
It's challenging.
Yeah, and that's the comment I think we'll register under the feasibility, if that's all right.
Thanks.
Okay, any other comments on this one? Very good. We'll go to OT2-011, which is a very similar measure, surgical timeliness of care time between needle biopsy and initial breast cancer surgery. It is to be paired with the first one, or it could stand alone, either one, but I think it was recommended that the two be measured together as I read the reviews. So reviewing this particular one was Dr. Bassett and Dr. Freeze. So, Dr. Freeze, it's you.
Thanks, Lee. Good afternoon, everyone. And just remind me, Lee, do you want us just to discuss the impact at this point or just an overall brief critique?
Let's start with the importance category, which will include impact, gap, and relation to outcomes.
Okay. So very briefly, I think, as you might imagine, we have similar – I share similar concerns from the previously reviewed measure to this one in terms of impact, gap, and relationship to outcome. Similar to the first measure, we do have an issue of a clear understanding of the impact of time from from biopsy to definitive surgery. I've actually done some empirical work with this in SEER Medicare, and we've looked for this relationship and have not been able to find it in terms of clinical outcome improvement between needle biopsy and breast cancer surgery. And the authors of the measure, the proponents of the measure, do say that. In terms of the gap, we do have evidence of a gap from an observational purpose of sample that was submitted. So there is an evidence of gap. However, that's not been validated outside of the proposer's data set. And then in terms of relationship to outcome, again, the assertion is a relationship between timeliness of biopsy to surgery and anxiety, and no data were presented to support that.
Okay, thank you. Let's go through, and are there any other comments from the voting members at all?
This is Pat. Can I make a comment, or is this
absolutely.
Just the reviewers?
No. Now open to all voting members. And Dr. Kaufman, I'm going to come back to you in just a minute when we're done as well.
Okay, this is Pat Haugen. Just another comment, another area of concern that I had about this measure is that as you look at that window between biopsy and first surgical intervention, there's also a complication because patient preference, time to make the decision, second opinion, we want to make certain that delays aren't related to substandard care, but delays don't necessarily impact outcome, and one needs to make certain that patient preference, again, and other decision-making that the patient needs to participate in are accounted for, and this measure could very well be encouraging, accelerating that process for the patient versus giving the patient time for adequate decision-making and assessment.
Okay.
This is Bonnie Teschendorf. I had another question or comment about this, too, and that would be related to payer. I think this could vary greatly by virtue of the payer in the case of any individual patient.
Could you illustrate that, or Bonnie, what might cause that?
Well, I think waiting for approval to have the surgery paid for by whatever the insurance carrier that the patient has their plan with.
Okay. All right. Any other comments from voting members?
Actually, just to follow up on Bonnie's point, another rationale for a delay might be a coordination with plastics for recon. So that would also implicate a delay which may not impact actual quality.
Okay, and that was Chris?
Yes, I'm sorry, Chris Freeze.
Yeah, okay. All right. Dr. Kaufman, any comments for you?
Well, a couple. Another reason to, you mentioned about potential exclusion. Another reason is neoadjuvant chemotherapy. Many patients will get that and the surgery will be delayed. Patient refuses surgery, and I've mentioned insurance coverage. I think there are exclusions on many of the quality parameters and other quality parameters. As far as a background and a piece of literature that I was not able to put in the original one that I included with the added submitted data was the European guidelines for their quality assurance in breast cancer screening clinics. They have an article that was published in Annals of Oncology in 2008 that I didn't see. But they have comments about both these measures, 5 working days for the first one we talked about and within 15 working days of this one. There's no survival benefit and there's no morbidity as far as like breast infections and things like that. But if you ask any patient, what's a quality center, they one of the things, not only the only thing, certainly there's CVs and stuff, but one of the things is whether they were taken care of in 2 weeks versus 6 weeks. This is not a measure that you'd say everybody has to perform 100%. It is a measure, both of these are measures that people, you know, 90% of your patients should perform under a certain number, but they're, you know, not every patient will have plastic reconstruction and so on.
Dr. Kaufman, do you know why the Europeans picked 5 and 15 days? Is that in their article?
It's in the – oh, why it – no, this is actually the fourth edition. So maybe in the earlier editions they had reasons.
But they didn't – okay, so you're not aware of their reasoning right now for those dates?
I can't give it to you right here.
Okay, fair enough. Any other comments? I think with that, let's go to the voting on importance. So we will do just what we did before. First, go into impact. Bill Putnam?
Partial.
Chris Reeves?
Minimal.
Susan Gooden?
Partial.
David Benson?
Minimal.
Bonnie Teschendorf?
Minimal.
Susan Beck? Susan Beck, did we lose her?
Oops, sorry, I was muted. Minimal.
Okay. And Pat Haugen?
Minimal.
And I will also vote minimal. Next is gap in performance. Did they demonstrate a gap? So Bill Putnam?
Minimal.
Chris Reeves?
Minimal.
Susan Gooden?
Minimal.
David?
Minimal.
Bonnie?
Minimal.
Susan Beck?
Minimal.
Pat Haugen?
Minimal.
And I am minimal. And finally, relation to outcomes, Bill Button?
Did not meet.
Chris Reeves?
Did not meet.
Susan Gooden?
Did not meet.
David Benson?
Did not meet.
Bonnie?
Did not meet.
Susan Beck?
Did not meet.
Pat?
Did not meet.
And I'm also did not meet. So I think, Heidi, given our previous experience, then we don't need to go through the other three criteria specifically.
Agreed, yes.
Can I make a comment, add to this?
Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to open it for any comments on the scientific usability feasibility.
Lee, I'm sorry about that. What I would add was a comment that was alluded to before that I think has to be very strongly underscored here, which is if we use this as a quality indicator and a patient decides to say doctor shop or look around at other options, we may end up hurting decision-making here by this measure. So actually, I think this could have detrimental effects on outcomes, unintended, of course.
Okay. And who was just speaking?
That's Dave Penson.
Oh, thanks, Dave. Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't recognize the voice. Other comments?
Lee, this is Chris Fries. I'd make a few other comments, sort of more for the improvement for future submissions. Again, to your point on the prior measure, the coding list was incomplete. I know these codes fairly well with my past work, and they need a lot of revision, more inclusive list of ICD-9 and procedure code, diagnosis and procedure codes, as well as the outpatient ones. I do believe there should be risk adjustment here. I'm not a breast surgeon or a radiologist, so I couldn't tell you precisely what those measures should be, but we've alluded to them earlier, desire for recon, perhaps older adults, others with comorbidities, and that would also raise the issue of exclusion criteria, which were not provided but should be carefully thought out.
Very good. Other comments? I think my final one would be to see the link. A very important study of these two measures would be to eventually show that shorter time frames actually do reduce anxiety in a patient, and I don't think we saw that in either discussion. So, any other question or any other commentary?
Thanks for your review.
Yeah, yeah. Very good. Well, let's go to the next measure then, which is 02016, Functional Assessment of Cancer Therapy for Lung. And Drs. Putnam, Gooden, and Fries were the reviewers here. So, Bill, should we begin with you for the importance?
Sure. So the Functional Assessment of Cancer Therapy -Lung is a 36-item questionnaire. It's very simple, and it's been used for, you know, nearly 20 years perhaps a bit longer in some places. The information that was presented was excellent. It has been used in numerous clinical trials. It has been validated. It shows significant differences in quality of life between patients treated with therapy A versus therapy B. And this can be used to guide patients toward a therapeutic intervention that has improved quality of life and similar outcomes in terms of survival, rate of progression, and so forth. I thought the information that was presented was all very well done. I had really no significant issues with the presentation. There were two items that I was mostly concerned about. One was the ability to translate this measure into the care of the individual patient at the point of care delivery. In other words, how could this be used for an individual patient? Now, we could certainly use it for populations of patients, and I think this is where its value as an outcome in clinical trials is to be emphasized. But the two issues that I had was one for the care of the individual patient, and the second was the ability to collect this data outside of a clinical trial by practitioners in smaller community-based or outpatient-based practice environments.
Bill, if I could ask you to revisit both of those comments during the usability feasibility discussions.
Okay.
I don't want to lose them, but they'll probably be just a little bit more germane right there.
Very fine. Then I'll stop at that point and let the other reviewers comment.
Sounds great. Susan?
Yeah, I agree with everything that Bill said in regards to impact, particularly in a disease with high morbidity and high mortality, but also with all the changes in therapy that have become available in the last years and the decision-making on that therapy. Having a tool such as this that can evaluate in those four domains the quality of life in individual patients, I think the impact could is enormous in decision-making and treatment and care, and certainly even in comparative effectiveness research.
And Chris Fries?
Well, I would echo the comments of the prior reviewers. I would just sort of reiterate my confusion or my lack of clarity between translating this quality of life measure, which is outstanding and I use clinically and in my own research, to an outcome measure that would be publicly reported and perhaps compared across either providers of care or institutions. I haven't seen any data on that. We've done some internal work here, and the contribution of medical oncologists, for example, to a quality of life variation scores using FACT actually is about 7% of the variance. So if we're trying to evaluate the quality of care provided by individual providers or groups, I think the concern is we don't have that data yet to move forward.
You bring up a great question. Heidi, are we looking at outcomes related only to providers, or could we also be looking at outcomes related to therapies in this case?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question. The Outcome Steering Committee was fairly broad in what they defined as the different topics that would fall within an outcome, and patient experience was one of them. I don't know that they necessarily called out what we're talking about here, but I do think that this type of an approach in looking at how this has impacted patient care and them guiding them to the interventions would fall within what they've defined as an outcome within this project.
Can I add 2 cents to that? Because I think Chris's point's really well taken. I have experience not with the FACT-L, but with the FACT-P, and prostate. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, these measures tie really well to treatments, and often even within a treatment group, you know, a higher volume surgeon has better outcomes than a lower volume surgeon. So obviously not every outcome is going to fit every treatment or every provider, but I think there is a role at least for invasive procedures where you might pick something up here. So I acknowledge Chris's comment, but would say maybe not. Maybe for providers to do interventions, it may actually be a very good outcome variable.
So let me suggest the following: that we'll still go through the importance vote, and if this passes, we will take up this discussion under usability and try and talk a little bit more about provider versus therapy, just to clarify those points. Is that acceptable to the group?
Yep.
This is Pat. Can I just ask a question? Because I reviewed one similar. I still have, I mean, if importance is being answered as importance in public reporting, I'm still a little bit confused as to what exactly would be the public reporting that comes out of the importance here. These are good tools, but I'm...
I think what I heard, Pat, and I'll allow clarification here in a minute, is that if a patient was trying to compare various therapy options on the basis of quality of life, that this would be a reliable and valid tool to make that comparison between various therapies.
Okay. I mean, I'm familiar with the tool because of my work in clinical trials, but I mean, is that what, because that's the confusion I've had with this. What is it we're talking, public reporting on what? You know, the provider, the center, the whatever. So, okay, if that's the target that we're moving forward with here, or the environment scope.
We'll, we have agreed to go ahead and allow it for the therapies, and we'll, so as we do the importance and gap and relation to outcomes, we can use it with that context.
May I add a comment? This is Bonnie Teschendorf again. I have extensive experience also with the FACT measures, and I'm a little confused myself about using this for public reporting or for quality improvement, in that it's very difficult for a definition of episode of care and to identify the subcategory of patients about whom you are speaking. Because when this instrument is used in a clinical trial, you obviously have a very tight set of criteria around who is admitted to that trial. It works perfectly well, and these are excellent instruments for purposes of a trial. But I have real reservations about how we would identify what is the episode of care so that there's a commonality that people could understand as they think about this in looking at either quality improvement or some sort of public reporting. I really can't quite conceptualize that.
So, Bonnie, did I misstate just a minute ago? Because this is a question, not a challenge. Are you saying that it perhaps wouldn't be a valid measure to compare, say, four chemotherapy regimens who've all been appraised with the FACT document, that would not be a good comparator?
Yes, I would say that would be true.
Okay.
And the reason being that all chemotherapy regimens are not the same. They don't all last the same length of time. They're not all. They don't all have the same side effects. I think that this requires much more thought before considering that this would be appropriate for use in some sort of public reporting. I don't understand how it could be used.
This is Heidi. If I could just give an example of another measure that's been endorsed or a survey that's been endorsed that I think is comparable, if that would be helpful.
Sure.
So, for example, NQF has endorsed the CAP series, and the HCAPs being the primary one, which right now the results are not publicly reported, but the use of the tool itself is, and I think this is a similar thing. It's the first step. It's a key component to getting to the true outcome, which you ultimately want to be able to get. and does have a definite quality improvement aspect. But you're right, it's not, I don't think this measures or survey is being put forward as something that's a measure that would be reported out on one provider versus the other. That's not how it's being put forward. It's the first step, it's the survey component. And I don't know how you all feel about that, but it's a similar approach as to what we've taken with the HCAHPS, which has been endorsed.
This is Pat. Can I ask a question then based on that? You know, the guidelines have been that we need to look at these for public reporting. And I had the same concern that I think this tool is good for quality improvement, but to say, I mean, is this usable information for public reporting and then for patient assessment decision making? That's a gap for me to try to figure that out. So just my comment.
And there was someone else trying to comment back there.
Bill Putnam, I don't know what the HCAHPS is.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's the hospital's patient satisfaction, patient experience survey. So very similar to the Press Ganey, but it's produced and maintained by the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to say about this is that, you know, this may be something for that could be focused on clinical trials. In other words, that it could be, you know, one outcome would be is a patient-related outcome part of your clinical trial? And if it is, I would consider that to be positive and advantageous. If it isn't, then it would be a negative. So that would be one way that we could look at, is it being used within a clinical trial? And that could certainly be used for both patients' betterment and for future better understanding of treatment.
This is Bonnie again. I will say that this kind of measure has been used in the past, and the NCCN project did a comparison across, and is continuing to, across centers. But that information is not publicly available. It's available to the member centers. And that's a different situation where you can compare your center results to another center, but in doing that, you have the capability of looking at data coming out of a very large database. You can identify what is the episode of care, and you can identify the components of the trial that the patient participated in. So I'm not sure that everyone understands exactly what it means to report this publicly or to encourage people to use it in individual practice, whereas it was developed for the purposes of use in a trial, and it works perfectly marvelously.
Yeah, I concur.
This is Susan Beck. I totally agree with you, Bonnie, and I feel like there's just not good evidence that this varies across practices, and that's the type of measures like the HCAHPS that are reported across hospitals, for example. So even though it's an excellent tool for its purpose, even the purpose that we stated actually isn't in their application. So I had a hard time finding what was the quality measure piece of this specifically and how that would be used.
Well, I would love to be able to recommend it, but I just don't understand how it could be done.
Are there other comments? If that's the case, let's run through a vote and see where we end up here. It's been a great discussion. With the impact, so complete, partial, minimal, or did not meet, Dr. Putnam?
Impact is complete.
Complete, okay. Chris?
I want to just be sensitive to Bonnie's point, and I'm not sure where to rate that point. I think it's impact. Or its relation to outcome. I'm not sure which. So I'm a little stuck here. I'm going to say partially met.
Okay. Susan Gooden?
Hi. I certainly agree with Bonnie, but I think that's addressed under GAP. So I'm going to go with complete.
Okay. David Benson?
I'm going to go with complete two.
Bonnie?
Partial.
Susan Beck?
Partial.
Pat Haugen?
Partial.
And I'm also a partial. And let's look at gap in performance. Well, given this discussion, that's going to be hard to do. If Heidi, I need a little help here because we obviously have decided we can't do this between providers. And is it between providers where we are trying to identify gaps?
I think gap is determined very broadly. So is there a, and the way we look at it typically is, does this address an area of care where perhaps comparison of therapies is not necessarily a tool that's provided to patients? It's not often done. That type of information is not provided to them consistently. I'm giving examples. And Hala, can you pull up that section? Let's see what's documented under GAP, because I think that's the best place to look and see what has been documented. But again, we're looking to see, does this topic, does this survey tool, this measure, address an area where we know there's either variation in care or clearly low numbers of either the tool being provided, providers not providing this information to patients, that type of thing. So here we have disparities in care is widely published. So it doesn't give a percentage. But again, does that make sense? I mean, we're really going for, does this topic of assessing the therapies have an opportunity for improvement?
Can I chime in on that? Because I think this is, for me, as everyone was going through their points, I think this is where it has its problem, because Chris's comment about, you know, provider A versus provider B, or even hospital A versus hospital B, there's no data to support that a difference in quality of life outcomes is going to be related to quality of care there. There may be among procedures and certainly among providers performing procedures, but this is where I think it falls short, because you're not showing a gap here. And so that's how I translate these criteria as it relates to this, if that helps people think through it.
Well, and your form says specifically summarize the performance gap across providers, and it doesn't look like there's hardly anything provided on that particular topic, some population. But.
Yeah, I actually think that I think that was written because the typical type of measure we're looking at does assess either providers or health plans or hospitals, et cetera. But I think we need to take a look at our labeling here, because our intent is fairly broad. So I wouldn't let that language limit you from looking at this under this discussion.
But even if you change it from provider to hospital or health plan, you end up in the same hole. The only place where right off the bat that makes some sense is comparing treatments, which, you know, maybe the general nature of the treatment as opposed to the quality of the treatment delivered. So in my mind, even when you start changing that wording, it's still problematic.
I think there's even another, this is Bonnie again, there's even another way to look at this. When you're asking patients to fill out questionnaires to report on their own experience and their own feelings and their response to treatment, you're asking them to tell you what they think. So it's not between providers here. It's about between patients. The criteria doesn't even apply to, I mean, the way it's written doesn't even apply to an actual patient-reported outcome. It's sort of an artificial category, I think.
It is very artificial, and I don't have a good way to make it any clearer right now, other than Heidi's comment of we'll try and think of it broadly. I think everybody's heard the issues there. We'll go ahead and take a vote and just see what happens. Bill Putnam?
Did not meet.
Chris Reeves?
I'll say Reeves. Did not meet.
Susan?
Did not meet.
David?
Minimally.
Bonnie?
Did not meet.
Susan Beck?
Did not meet.
And Pat?
Did not meet.
And I'm also going to do a did not meet. Okay, relation to outcomes. Let's just go back through. Bill Putnam?
Did not meet.
Chris Freeze?
I'll say partially met.
Susan, Gooden?
Minimally.
Okay. David Benson?
Partial.
Bonnie?
Minimal.
Susan Back?
Minimal.
Pat Haugen?
Minimal.
And I'm minimal. I would say we just threw it out. Heidi?
Yeah, it's getting harder for me to tell. I think if you all are willing, because I think you have two more measures that I think you're going to have a similar conversation, it may be helpful if you all agree to run through the rest of the criteria, because I think this type of a survey tool, this instrument, will be of interest and will be discussed by the steering committee. So I do think having this information, if you don't mind going through each of them, will be helpful to Lee as he talks about this with the steering committee.
Make a suggestion. I don't know if this is appropriate or not, but if it's not, you can throw it out. It seems to me that we really need to think carefully about what we're asking for an outcome measure that relates to something that the patient tells us. And, I mean, I work with this all the time, and my focus is more on, you know, getting approval from the FDA and from EMEA, but I think that for purposes of this project, somehow these categories don't quite match up with where we're trying to go or how we're defining outcomes. And I would really like to propose that there be perhaps another subcommittee who might contemplate this issue of how could patient-reported data be used more effectively. This is going to be a continuing problem with each one of the instruments that we look at.
Including HCAHPS. Same problems. I think, Heidi, we'll note the comment, and we'll still go through the criteria here, but duly noted. And by the way, folks, I'm going to remind you, we are being recorded, so you just need to identify yourself each time, including me. I believe that was Bonnie who just spoke.
I apologize.
Yeah, not a problem. And so, Heidi, I think we will still go through the other three criteria.
I think, Lee, it will be helpful to you because I think these types of patient-reported tools are of great interest, particularly to the consumer and purchaser group. So I think having some additional background on this would be helpful.
Okay.
If you don't mind.
Let's go to the scientific category then and see if we have comments first from Bill Putnam and Susan Gooden, Chris Fries.
And Lee, I think someone was trying to say something before.
Sorry.
This is Susan Beck, and I don't totally agree with Bonnie. I think that the criteria are still the right criteria. I just don't think that the science and the testing of these kinds of patient-reported outcomes is at the stage where we have the evidence to support their use in some of these ways, and I think that's what needs to be prioritized. So I don't think it's the criteria that's the problem. I think it's how do we take these good tools and put them into a better frame so they could be used for quality.
Susan, let me have you hold that comment and reiterate it again under usability. I think it'll be very relevant there.
Okay.
Bill, Chris, and Susan, do you have any comments about the scientific category?
I'm trying to scroll through. This is very difficult to do with these documents. I would say, obviously, the data are robust, that this is a reliable and valid measure of quality of life. The open question is, does it translate to quality of care? I do believe that there should be risk adjustment here if it's going to be a quality measure because David's patients look very different than my patients. There should probably be some exclusion criteria if this is a quality of care measure. For example, patients on phase one trials, patients with end-of-life concerns but are still on active therapy, et cetera. And then I'm not sure if this is the right section. I'm just trying to scroll through. Is this where we talk about denominator? Because there's no discussion really of how this would be measured as a quality of care measure, either a rate or a numerator-denominator kind of approach.
I believe the way it's rated is as an absolute score for a population.
So again, would that be this group of patients on this trial compared to this group of patients on this trial? I think the point would be there's not enough development of what the actual quality of care measure would be here.
Right. So just to qualify the statement, you do get an assessment of a quality of life score, both by patient and by population at a given point in time.
This is Heidi. If I could just add again, based on the recent review of the HCAHPS, because I think that's a good example, again, of what we have here, it's really not necessarily a calculation that's being done. It's more of a yes, no, are you using this tool with patients? I think that's literally what we're looking at here.
Then that's an entirely different discussion. If it's yes, no, is this being used in practice, that's an entirely different discussion.
I mean, maybe Jennifer Beaumont would like to add something, but I think it's being put forward as, is this tool being used? It's not necessarily that it's looking at the results of it, and that's what I was trying to get at before, not necessarily talking about, well, does this provider, what's the results of how their patients view quality of life, et cetera, versus this one. It's more, is this practice, is this individual using this tool as a part of the treatment? But
yes,
Jennifer, can you tell me if that's correct or not?
Let's go one at a time, please.
Sorry. This is Jennifer. I just wanted to jump in and say that we kind of had the same difficulties in, you know, thinking that it was important to get a measure of patient outcomes, but how do we put it into this framework? So it's been great, definitely, to hear the conversation. And maybe it is just a little too early to push this in, but it'll be great to see how you guys decide the priorities and such.
This is Pat. Can I make a comment on that?
Sure. Go ahead.
You know, the concern about, and this, I had this question on the one I reviewed, too, with yes-no reporting, you still have the issue of how does that inform the patient, because the issue is what do you do with the information? So let's say you have a treatment or whatever that has poor quality of life versus the other, like, you know, the assessment that goes on with trials, and there's maybe actions taken relative to supplemental therapies or whatever. So for just public reporting, a yes-no of whether an institution or provider uses something, I mean, in that case, you know, it's pretty easy for everybody to say yes in some context, and I don't see how that really informs the public adequately relative to the topic.
Again, on the yes-no question, I'm gonna save that for usability if I could. I think it fits better into that category. We'll come back to the scientific we're on right now. Are there any other questions about scientific?
This is Susan Gooden. I guess my question, I'm just trying to put Heather's comment into sort of context for me. And, you know, to do it as an analogy to some of the earlier measures where we were looking at 19 days versus 21 days, sort of how many people achieve that, is this a yes-no based on how many people are actually just using the FACT questionnaires? Am I understanding what you said, Heather? Heidi, I'm sorry.
That's my quince name, so I'll respond to it. It's fine. Yes, I mean, I think it goes back to, again, and you all may, one thing you can do is determine that you feel that this survey tool is not yet ready to fit within an outcomes project because it doesn't go far enough. And I think that's what it sounds like you're struggling with right now, which is understandable. But really, when it comes down to public reporting, it is really looking at, I think, a yes-no, is this tool being used, similar to HCAHPS, because that's all it is right now when you look out there. And what we're really asking you to do when it comes to public reporting is it appropriate for it? And I think that's what Pat's mentioning, and you're kind of moving down into the usability criteria. But I think that's probably the thing that may trip you all up, I think, continually as we discuss these things is, does this indeed get far enough down the road to start really addressing outcomes, capturing outcomes? Am I helping make sense of this? I'm trying to help put this in some context for you all.
I think you are. I'm going to propose the following to this group. Under scientific, let's just stick to the, is this a reliable and valid measure of quality of life?
for a patient with lung cancer? And simply answer that question. We will then go to usability and take on the second question, is this a reliable measure to use for public reporting of patient outcomes for comparator purposes? Is that a fair way to do this?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to the scientific category first. And again, the question before you then, does this measure reliably and validly measure quality of life for a lung cancer patient? And we'll just take the roll call here. Bill Putnam?
Well, as presented, since this pertains, since the information presented was on clinical trials, I would have to say that yes, completely.
Okay. Chris?
Completely met.
Susan Gooden?
Completely.
David Benson?
Complete.
Bonnie?
Yes, in trials.
Susan Beck? In trials. Okay, Susan Beck?
I'm going to say partially because some of the reliability isn't always that great.
Okay, and Pat Haugen?
Partial.
And I'm going to put a complete. Now let's go to the usability. And the question there is, I think per the discussion we've just had, is this measure reliable enough for us to compare therapies, providers, hospitals, et cetera? And I'm going to make just one comment I haven't heard in the discussion, and that is, of course, that the quality of life changed with different points in time, even on the same clinical trial, as people progress through. And I think that's probably a sub-point of what Bonnie's already made. Are there other comments about usability?
I have one, Bill Putnam. That to use this as a static tool is like taking a snapshot only. It's valuable when it's used to compare either the patient as his or her own control, or perhaps in comparison to a larger group that is appropriately aligned with that patient's clinical condition, stage of disease, et cetera.
Okay. Other comments?
Yes. And I think this would apply to all of these measures, but I think that I'm not quite sure. This is Bonnie. I'm not quite sure how this data will go into a database and then enable reporting. It would have to be stratified by multiple factors in order to have a report come out that would generate information that would be of value. I think that's kind of along the same lines as the previous comment.
Okay, very good. Other comments? So under usability, I think the question we're trying to answer is this tool ready for a comparator of performances against either providers, therapies, and we'll just go through the roll. Bill?
Can we have one more additional comment?
Sure.
Bill Putnam. You know, this has been used in such excellent ways in clinical trials. Is, you know, we potentially could divide this into two parts. One, its use in clinical trials or quality of life measures in clinical trials, such as the FACT-L or FACT-G or whatever, compared to none. And secondly, is it a valuable tool to be used as a one-off assay, one-off analysis? A snapshot, as it were, for patients who show up in your clinic undergoing treatment. So if it's going to be for the individual patient, then I would have to say did not meet.
So I think since this group is not going to be addressing clinical trials, we can take that off our and you should be thinking about the second perspective as you vote here.
Okay. Then I will put did not meet.
Okay. Chris Fries.
I'll say minimally, Matt.
Susan Gooden.
Minimally.
David Benson.
Actually, I'll say partially.
Bonnie Teschendorf.
Did not meet.
Susan. Beck. Are you on mute, Susan?
Minimal.
Okay. Pat Haugen.
Minimal.
And I am minimal.
This is Heidi. technically, they've asked us to have you do the sub-criteria, so if it's okay, we're going to come up with a summary that kind of does that for you.
Okay.
If that's okay with everyone, and then we'll circulate it again rather than make you go through each one, because I think you're covering, unless you think there's something different within the sub-criteria for scientific acceptability and usability that you'd like to pull out and change your recommendation on. Does that make sense?
Let's see the sub-criteria.
So for scientific acceptability, is it well specified? Does it meet reliability, validity, the exclusions, risk adjustment, meaningful differences, comparability, and disparities are the sub-criteria for that. So we can either go through each one, or we can use the same, your rating generally across.
You know, this is such a good group, I'm not going to put them through that pain.
Yep, I understand.
All right. Why don't we rely on you to do that, and then we will circulate it for commentary if there's a particular point that a committee member wants to make.
Okay, we'll do that. If everyone's comfortable with that, we'll do that for you, and you can tell us if we got it wrong.
Does anyone have a specific comment they'd like to make? Okay.
Okay.
Let's finish feasibility on the fact lung, and let's open it up for comments. So you see those criteria up on the screen. The data are generated as a byproduct of care processes, electronic sources, the exclusions, susceptibility and accuracies, et cetera.
This
in other words, is it feasible?
This is Chris Fries. I'd make the one point, I think Bill just reiterate, this is widely used and a lot of clinicians are aware of the measure. However, most of them are not scoring them in routine clinical practice, so that does present a challenge to feasibility. And I know trials are doing this electronically, but that's not routinely available in clinical practice as well, so I just want to have that sort of on the record. A strength, however, is it's been translated, so that is a strength of the measure.
Other comments?
Small practices, individual physicians. This is Bill Putnam. Small practices, individual physicians may find this to be burdensome, particularly indigent care facilities, inconsistent or no funding from entities outside of clinical trials or specific governmental programs.
If this is Bonnie again, if this instrument could be completed by the patient in the waiting area and scanned into an electronic database for an electronic record, it would be extremely feasible.
So there are, let me just ask for a little more clarification. There are actually a large number of oncology practices that do just that, electronic tablets, and you fill out the questionnaire in the waiting room while you're waiting to see the physician. Your point is this could be used in the practice setting if that kind of technology was available?
It absolutely can, and you can generate the scores immediately, and someone could hand the score for that individual patient compared to other patients who are on the same treatment regimen. So you could actually use it in clinical practice, but it would be highly dependent upon this electronic component.
And would they have to have same point in time?
Yes.
So yes. They'd have cycle three to cycle three, if you will, on the same chemo regimen?
Yes.
Okay. I wonder about the accruing enough numbers to be effective at that within any given practice on the feasibility side.
Well, it depends on where one works.
Sure, sure. Okay, and other comments? Thought I heard somebody else.
Back, I wanted to comment a little bit. In this section, they make mention of their work with NIH Promise Initiative, which has really been doing a lot of work to more specifically develop specific item banks, which include short forms and computer-assisted technology and stuff. And so it gets a little confusing, and then one wonders, is that a better way to go?
Susan, are you still there?
Which Susan?
Susan Beck.
Oh, okay.
Yep. I guess we lost her. Okay. Any other comments? Let's take a vote on feasibility. Bill Putnam?
Minimal.
And Chris Breeze?
Minimal.
Susan Gooden?
Minimal.
David Benson?
Minimal.
Bonnie Teschendorf?
Partial.
Susan Beck?
Minimal.
We got you back. Great. Pat Haugen?
Minimal.
And I'm minimal. Okay. Okay. Given that discussion, the next two measures are extremely similar. And we could perhaps just say, do we really feel there's an exception to the reporting of the other two measures and discuss those exceptions, or we can go through the process for both measures. I would prefer to discuss exceptions, given the way that discussion went. Is that satisfactory with the group? Or if I have an objection, let's talk it through.
None from me.
Makes sense to me.
Okay. Well, let's go then to the breast measure. So it's OT2017, which is the FACT breast functional assessment. And the folks who reviewed that were Susan Beck, Pat Haugen, and Bonnie Teschendorf. Susan Beck, you want to go ahead and open with any specific comments you'd like to make about this measure?
Well, I think the comments that I have reflected in the discussion. I guess the one
major... Susan? Yeah. Sorry to interrupt, but you're breaking up on us. Could you pick up a handset or something?
Yeah, okay. Is that better?
It is. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry, my other phone died and I had to go to my cell.
Okay.
So I would say the presentation would be very similar to the issues that have already been discussed. One exception might be around the issue of which specific types of patients with breast cancer is this proposed for? And that's never really clearly stated. And a lot of the testing seems to be done in people who have regional and advanced disease, but that was just a lack of specification.
So when you say specific types, you mean adjuvant or even patients who might be in remission?
Right, or surgery, clearly. Or survivors, or, I mean, you know, there's the whole continuum, but it's just sort of breast cancer.
Okay, very good. Pat, do you have any additional comments?
No, other than the fact that as I am familiar with this from clinical trials, it was very difficult to translate to the total population and what was the focus and the intent, and I don't think that was communicated in the application materials. So important from an individual patient, but again, the question on reporting.
Okay. And Bonnie?
Yes, I think that one of the things that may be helpful to all of us who are working in trials is that we rarely use this instrument alone. And we often combine it with other instruments that give us a deeper picture of certain components of, you know, say a pain questionnaire or something. So if one is to consider this one all by itself, it does have some deficits. But basically, I think our previous conversation applies completely to this instrument.
Okay. Open to the floor. Any additional comments about this measure? Sounds like silence. Just procedurally, I'm thinking I would basically just carbon the previous set of votes unless a member wants to reintroduce a category and revote it. So are we okay with, first of all, importance? And if someone wants to reopen, that is fine. Just say yes. So anybody on importance? Scientific, usability, feasibility. Okay, then we will take the same voting approach to this measure that we did with the FACT Lung, in addition to the comments that we just heard by the first reviewers.
And with that, let's go to OT2-019, which is the FACT-G, the general version for cancer, and start with comments from Bill Putnam.
I really have nothing else to add except for what went on with previous discussions, maybe to a lesser extent, because it's more generalized.
Okay. Susan?
I would agree with Bill.
And Chris?
Was it me?
On my sheet it was. You were the other reviewer.
I lucked out then, didn't I? Well, I'll use my insightful analysis. I would say if we're going to FACT-G and we're opening it up to multiple tumor types, that we would have to stratify reporting by tumor type and probably by stage and type of treatment, et cetera. So it would be using FACT-G in a population would be, for public reporting, would be quite challenging. We'd have to think through how we would report out by tumor type.
Excellent point. All right, given that, is there anyone on the committee who would like to open up one of the four criteria, important, scientific, usability, or feasibility? So do we have a consensus then to go ahead with the same approach we used with FACT-B and FACT-Lung?
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, very good. Much to my amazement, we have time to do the last measure, and that is the risk-adjusted colorectal surgery outcome. I really think, let me commend all of you for both the depth of the commentary and getting through this. This is a lot of work. So it looks like, David, you are our only reviewer unless the other two reviewers are present. I didn't hear their names. Heidi, are they both absent today?
I believe so, unless they signed in later. Dr. Temple or Dr. Thieberg on?
Doesn't sound like it.
Sounds like
okay.
No.
Okay. David, you're going to carry this one by yourself.
Okay. the long and short of it, this is a measure that comes from the American College of Surgeons National Quality Improvement Program. Basically, it the dependent variant, the numerator is mortality and major morbidity all within the 30-day window. The measure itself, it takes all colorectal procedures, and the key to this whole thing is that it basically does risk adjustment. They've proposed, they've included a whole bunch of information on models for that document that this this system works. From you know, starting at the top, you know, from an important standpoint, I think no one's going to argue that these this is meaningful. Mortality and you know, severe morbidity is something that we have to be aware of. So I think that's it works well there. The biggest problem that I see with this this particular measure comes from the feasibility. I mean, they've done a nice job showing that the measure works. They've presented their statistical analysis of their model showing that they it's reproducible, that the results are valid. The problem really is that can you roll this out in a setting outside of a NISQIP hospital? Just knowing the way NISQIP is structured, all this information is collected by nurse abstractors, and it's going to be fine in a hospital that is part of NISQIP, but for a non-NISQIP hospital, which is a fair number of hospitals in this country, they're not going to be able to participate in this, and that affects the feasibility.
Could you define what a NISQIP hospital is? For the
well, basically, it's a hospital that is participating in the National Surgical Quality Improvement Program. So to be a part of this, a hospital has to commit to participating and to submit their information. And importantly, they have to pay for a nurse abstractor and transmit their data to the American College of Surgeons. It's a great program. You know, Vanderbilt participates, and I've actually worked with the college on this program. I don't have a conflict in that. I don't have a horse in the race one way or the other. But for a community hospital that doesn't participate in NISQIP, they're not going to collect this information routinely. This is not information that's readily available in the administrative databases. This information comes from detailed chart review by nurse abstractors, which affects the feasibility. And also the way it's reported within NISQIP, the way it gets fed back to the hospital is in an O-to-E ratio, so observed versus expected. So a hospital is told, compared to the other NISQIP hospitals, and given their risk-adjusted what would be expected, given their patient profile versus what's observed. So, again, you have to be a part of the program to be part of the benchmarking process.
And just a clarification, if a hospital had a tumor registry, which most of them do, that would not be enough depth to participate in these measures?
No, sir. That's the Commission on Cancer and the various tumor registry, the national, the state tumor registries. This is something above and beyond that.
Okay.
NISQIP is not a COC program. It's a separate program within the College of Surgeons in their Quality Improvement Division.
And are there any barriers, aside from the cost you mentioned, for a hospital participating?
I don't think so. It's not clear from the application. You know, you actually have to join the program, and the cost is considerable. That's all I can throw into it.
Okay.
This is Bruce Hall. I'm on from the college, and I apologize for jumping in. But
that's
I was told to join at 5:50, so I'm not sure whether that was the correct message or not, but I can help clarify if necessary.
Bruce, let me come back to you in 1 second, if I may. I'm glad you're here, but let me just see if there's any other comments from the other voting members first on the measure in general.
This is Chris Fries, and maybe we can have the college chime in on this, but one of the issues usually with NISQIP data is you need a sufficient number of cases to report the measure. And so, again, for public reporting in some of our smaller hospitals, this may become an issue where they're not able to participate. Even if they wanted to, they may not be able to have sufficient numbers of cases for reliable estimates.
Okay. Other comments from voting members? So, Bruce, could you address those two questions?
Yes, thanks. I apologize if there was some miscommunication. I think from looking at the agenda, I was told to join in during the public comment period. So
you're fine.
I'm sorry, you're late.
Right on time. Nope.
The two things I heard were that you have to be part of the program to participate. So the submission materials explicitly state that that's not the case. What we're talking about is providing a very parsimonious algorithm that institutions would file data for, and that algorithm would be applied to give them an OE ratio on this particular measure and this particular issue. Now, it is true that some of these fields have to be abstracted from the medical record, but our submission very explicitly states what we think the burden of that would be. So there is not a subscription fee. You do not have to be participating in NISQIP. It is data that is drawn from NISQIP historically to develop the measure, but it is not required to be a program participant. A very simple algorithm would be applied to this fairly small data set. This is a smaller data set than is traditional in NISQIP. So it's a very parsimonious set, and it's a very reduced burden, but there is a burden, and we give an explicit statement of what we think that would be in terms of FTE.
Bruce, can I ask for one clarification?
Sure. Can I ask who that is? I'm sorry, I missed.
This is David Penson. I'm the guy who reviewed your application.
Hi, thank you.
My question is, are the data that you present in the application from that parsimonious model, or is it from the larger NISQIP model?
The performance of the measure in the submission materials is based on the parsimonious model.
Okay.
And then, Bruce, if you could also address the question from Chris Fries about volume of patients.
Sure. So we also explicitly state in the model what we think the case numbers would need to be to achieve an acceptable level of reliability. We think for this colorectal measure it would be roughly 65 cases per year. And we give the specific mathematics that show what the reliability calculation would be. We also estimate the number of hospitals in the country that could meet that level of case, and it turns out to be roughly 40 or 45% of hospitals in the country that would be able to sustain that case volume, but that does cover 85% or more of the colorectal cases in the country. So the college has always acknowledged that our feeling is that no one measure will be applicable to all hospitals in the country, because there are 4,000 surgical hospitals in the country, but half of them do fewer than 500 cases in total per year. So this is a measure that may only apply to 40 or 45% of hospitals, but it would cover 85% of the cases. And the mathematics behind those statements are included in the measure submission materials.
Okay, good. Other questions or comments?
This is Chris Breeze. To my knowledge, there's already a 30-day mortality measure endorsed by NQF for surgical patients, and there's also failure to rescue. Not the NISQIP approach to failure to rescue, but there is an existing death after complication measure for acute care hospital performance. So I'm a little confused. Is there a need for more granularity? Is that the argument by the college, or is there...
Chris, I'll, as the reviewer and some of us, I mean, I think the real advance for this measure over what I believe is already out there is the risk adjustment piece. So the very specific variables in the risk adjustment model make it something of an advance over the more general surgical measure.
That was David Benson.
Yeah, that's me. That's me again.
And risk-adjusted for specifically for colorectal cancer.
Correct. That's correct.
I'm sorry. One more. This is my world, so I've got to be nerdy on this. So I'm looking at the model, and I'm just wondering how many – this is Chris Freeze. There are 211 hospitals in the NISQIP that reported on this model. I'm wondering how many hospitals would actually have a SAS programmer or equivalent who would be able to calculate a hospital-specific O over E ratio.
That one I'll toss off to the college representative.
Thank you. Bruce Hall again. I just wanted to clarify a moment ago, I think maybe Dr. Newcomer said, correct me if I'm wrong, that it was colorectal cancer. It's not cancer specific. It's colorectal surgery. It does include cancer cases. All right.
Yep, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And then the following question about the programmer. Actually, there's no burden of programming on the hospital. This measure was developed in conjunction with CMS, and the implementation of a measure would be that the algorithms for calculation of modeling and the OE ratios would actually be done by whatever agency chose to implement the measure. These would not be done at each individual site, so there's no programming burden attached to any of the sites.
Okay, thank you.
Shall we take a look at the importance criteria? Everybody get their questions answered? All right, let's take a look at importance. The first criteria is impact. Bill Putnam?
Partially met.
Chris Freeze?
Completely met.
Susan Gooden?
Partially met.
David Benson?
Completely met.
Bonnie Teschendorf?
Partially met.
Susan Beck?
Completely met.
Pat Haugen?
Completely.
And Lee Newcomer, completely. Gap in performance is the next criteria. Bill?
Partially met.
Chris Freeze?
Completely met.
Susan Gooden?
Completely met.
David Benson?
Completely met.
Bonnie Teschendorf?
Completely met.
Susan Beck?
Completely met.
And Pat Haugen?
Partially.
And Lee Newcomer, completely met. Finally, relationship to outcomes or relation to outcomes. Bill Putnam?
Partially met.
Chris Freeze?
Partially met.
Susan Gooden?
Partially met.
David Benson?
Completely met.
Bonnie Teschendorf?
Partially met.
Susan Beck?
Completely met.
Pat Haugen?
Partially.
And Lee Newcomer, partially. With that, let's go to the scientific criteria.
Again, David, do you want to make any comments about the scientific criteria here?
Yeah, I mean, I going through the different pieces with the measure specifications, you know, I think it's just the application wasn't completely clear on which were the CPT codes that were included, which ones weren't. But the reliability and the validity information are there, and it's very convincing to me in that respect. So, and the fact that you can compare it across hospitals, I think, is a real strength. So in the sort of measurement piece, my only real criticism was, and I think the information are there, just weren't well presented here, is that you can't put all the pieces together vis-a-vis the CPT codes in the application. But beyond that, I think it looks like it functions very well.
Chris Fries, you identified yourself as an interested nerd on this, so I'm going to ask you if you have any additional comments.
Well, I think I still just hold deep concern, and I appreciate the understanding that this would using the reliability criteria calculated by the college, 45% of hospital, 85% of cases from a public reporting approach, what happens to 15% of the patients in the country that aren't reported on? That remains problematic to me.
Yeah, I mean, Chris, the problem with the measure, you and I are sort of coming and ending up in the same place. I think there's a feasibility issue here. Even if it is a smaller, parsimonious data set, there are just going to be places which can't report on this. And so if the measure is not applicable to the vast majority of cases, it is problematic, I think.
So let's table that particular one to feasibility. And again, back any other comments on scientific? I did have one clarification question. There's a reference constantly to infections as SSI. I didn't know what that acronym meant.
I think it's surgical site infection.
Ah, too easy. Okay, thank you. Other questions or comments?
This is Susan Beck. I guess, again, the reliability is, only moderate. So I just sort of register that concern.
Could you expand on that, Susan?
Well, in their whole, description, they say that 42.9% of hospitals met the 0.4 reliability criteria, which is only fair. And so there are some concerns with, to me, the reliability of the approach.
Could I ask, this is Chris Rees, could I ask a clarifying question, and maybe the college can pipe in? Has this parsimonious model been validated outside of NISQIP participating hospitals?
Mr. Arnold?
Yeah, Bruce Hall again. So, no, the only data we have are from NISQIP participating hospitals at the moment. And the reliability issue, we've submitted quite a bit of explanation of that. We feel that we're providing reliability data that very few measure developers are providing. And this level of reliability, many people are not familiar with characteristics of reliability calculated from interclass correlation. But this level of reliability is probably greater than the vast majority of any measures that have been passed or adopted in the past. So we feel like we're at a little bit of a disadvantage because many people, not necessarily this panel, but many people are not familiar with reliability calculations done in this fashion and how they relate to other considerations that we more commonly approach when we talk about reliability. So again, those levels of reliability that we base our measure on are felt to be moderate, and that does meet sort of the acceptable standards, if you will, that have been proposed in the literature. There's not a lot of experience with this kind of reliability in the literature for our entire profession. And I would like to just clarify one other thing. The CPT codes for the measure have been explicitly specified. I think there was some issue that the NQF did not initially print those in the measure materials or something. I believe that was the case. But those CPT codes are very explicitly provided. So if there's still any residual confusion about that, we're happy to clarify that.
Yeah, no, that's like I said, I know they're out there.
One comment and one question. This is Bill Putnam. Was the question regarding the reliability based only on the colorectal surgery patient population, or was this a process question? Has this process been used in the past?
This is Bruce. I sense that that question was not to me, or is it to me?
Well, I don't know. There was a question before your explanation about has this been used in other populations other than the NISQIP hospitals, and I didn't know if this was a colorectal population question or whether has another group done this type of testing and feedback for participants.
So the measure in front of you is based only on NISQIP data. If that's not answering the question, please let me know.
Well, I just wanted to just in support of that is that the Society of Thoracic Surgeons has, you know, performed similar measures for its members on both cardiac surgery operation, both coronary revascularization and valvular disease, as well as other congenital heart disease and general thoracic surgical operations such as lung cancer and esophageal cancer. So these models are things that have been used by other groups and have been used very effectively. And that was my comment. The other question that I had was, and I think it's important to know, is the use of audits in validating the individual data that's being submitted. Is this being audited?
Those are all for you.
Okay, well, I certainly support the notion that the approaches like this have been used both by the NSQIP for the college and by STS and other organizations very successfully in the past, so I agree with that. The data that this measure is based on is audited data. We have commented that an implementation, if some organization were to implement this measure, then it would be up to the implementation to specify whether the outcomes of the measure would be audited. We have not specified one particular auditing scheme within this measure. Again, we do audit within NISQIP in general, so the data and the models you look at are all based on audited experience. But our understanding was that auditing would be part of an implementation specification.
So, Bruce, are you suggesting that this would be doable outside of the NISQIP infrastructure? I mean, in order to get the proper benchmarking, wouldn't you have to participate in the NISQIP program and send your data to Chicago?
No, it's correct. You would absolutely not have to participate in NISQIP to participate in this measure. The measure would be a single algorithm. For instance, that algorithm might be possessed by CMS. It would be based on historical experience with NISQIP, but that risk adjustment algorithm might be possessed centrally by CMS, and institutions would only need to submit this limited data on colorectal surgery cases to the implementing organization and get their feedback. It would be separate from NSQIP. Now, if a hospital happens to participate in NSQIP, they would automatically meet that, but that is not required for the measure.
So NISQIP data informs the model, but it's not required.
Absolutely.
Right.
This is Chris Fries again. And on the complication measures, those are currently collected by chart review, are they not? They're not collected solely by diagnosis and procedure codes. So
correct.
So going forward, assuming a hospital was participating but was not an NSQIP participant, how would they measure your complication measures?
So in the submission materials, we give historical experience with what fraction of an FTE is required to collect X number of data fields on X number of cases. And when we apply those figures to this model, we get a conclusion that probably this complying with this measure would require about a 20th of an FTE in the quality improvement department or whatever department they happen to live in. That's based on roughly 65 cases per annum with this reduced data set.
Chris, this is Lee. I thought the clinical criteria they had listed here would be pretty easily obtainable by an abstractor.
Lee, I agree. I'm just
you know, the idea was that this could be easily done by all hospitals. Some hospitals, I would argue, would not be able to collect these data.
Sure.
Would not be able to afford the FTE.
I agree with that.
Okay. Well, in response and in defense, what we're saying is that 65 cases would fully meet the measure, and again, that's about 1/20th of an FTE. If a hospital does fewer cases than that per year, then obviously that's even smaller burden for them. But those are the hospitals that we feel are probably best served by a different measure. Those are the hospitals that are doing 15% of the cases in the country, not 85% of the cases in the country.
So let's go back to the topic at hand here is the scientific part of that. So the under that particular criteria, we're just trying to find out if the measures are could be reliably collected by an abstractor. We'll get to the other part in feasibility. Other comments on the scientific issue? Let me go through the roll call. Bill?
And I'm sorry, Lee, can we go through each of the sub-criteria? I know we're running out of time, but on this
We are out of time for that. We're either going to have to do another meeting or...
Why don't I develop a SurveyMonkey and have everyone rate the sub-criteria, if that's okay?
That would be fine. But I'm a little sensitive to the fact that we just ran out of time right now. So let's finish the voting on the four criteria, and we'll have to stop.
Okay.
So the scientific criteria, Bill?
Partially met.
Chris Fries?
Partially met.
Susan Gooden?
Partially.
David Pinson?
Partially.
Bonnie?
Partial.
Susan Beck?
Partial.
Pat?
Partial.
Lee? Partial. Let's move to usability. Any comments?
I mean, this is in my mind. I don't know if you call it usability or feasibility, but this is where you get into problems with people being able to participate, in my mind.
In usability, we're talking about could it actually could the measure be? Well, let's go back to the actual criteria here.
Well, here, I'm looking at it, so let me have, maybe it's really feasibility. So it's the ability to understand the results of the measure and
correct
decision-making. I mean, the problem here is that the measure really ends up being an O-to-E ratio. So if someone starts at 1.7 and drops to 1.2, that's clearly an improvement, but what does that mean? They're still 0.2 above what's expected, so there are some issues in my mind with usability.
Okay. Other comments?
Well, this is Susan Beck, and I guess just because of the composite nature of the measure, I was worried, especially in public reporting, how meaningful that would be to people. Would they understand what it meant?
Actually, this is Chris Fries. I would make a comment that, to my knowledge, the improvement curve from NSQIP is relatively flat. Is that correct over time? So the hospitals that have been collecting these data in aggregate have not substantively improved over the years. Is that not correct?
I can't comment on that.
Mr. Hall, do you have a comment?
Yeah, actually, our publications on this topic contradict that. We do show that hospitals participating over time seem to be improving. I caution myself on responding to the claim that the curve is flat because that's sort of up for discussion, but we do give a reference in the submission materials showing work that seems to indicate that the hospitals are improving over time.
And can you quantify that in any way?
I can't actually. In that particular reference of the that's in the submission materials, there are very exact quantifications, but it seems to be on the order of 5 to 15% per year, depending on which axis you're talking about.
Okay.
This is Pat, just from a patient. I do think there's a question on the usability for public reporting and understandability from a patient perspective, probably very suitable for improvement, but would question the public reporting and patient use.
And this is Lee. I'd also like to make the comment about consumer understandability of an odds ratio. I think is sometimes difficult. My second comment is that from a usability standpoint, it does require that the numbers don't get small enough to look at individual surgeons, so it requires a departmental approach Mm-hmm. And many hospitals simply are not organized to do that well. Any other comments? All right, let's go through with the vote. Bill?
Feasibility, partially.
We're on usability.
I'm sorry, usability would be partially.
Okay. Chris? Chris, did we lose you?
Sorry, partial.
Okay. Susan Gooden?
Minimally.
David Pynchon?
Partial.
Bonnie Tenschendorf?
Oh.
I'm sorry, we missed you, Bonnie.
Partial.
Partial, thank you. Susan Beck?
Partial.
Matt?
Did not meet.
Okay, and I'm going to be a partial. So we'll look finally at feasibility. Any additional comments there? I know we've had several in the preceding period. Let's take a vote. Bill, feasibility?
Partial.
Chris?
Minimal.
Susan?
Minimal.
David?
Minimal.
Bonnie?
Minimal.
Susan Beck?
Minimal.
Pat Haugen?
Minimal.
I'm actually going to go partial. And I think we have just gotten through that. We are obviously over time already. And Heidi, are there any members there for public comment?
I think we should ask Patrick if he has anyone.
Thank you.
The operator.
Patrick, anybody there for public comment?
Everyone's line is open at this time.
Okay.
Do we have any public comments then? All right. Heidi, what are our next steps?
Okay. So next steps. What we will do is summarize the discussion and get it out as quickly as possible. What we're also going to do is, because we need you to go through the sub-criteria, particularly with this last measure we discussed, develop a Survey Monkey and ask each of you to provide your ranking for each sub-criteria. Also, because several members of the committee were not able to participate, we will make sure that we circulate comments, make sure everyone is fully informed on how everyone provided input and comments. So expect to see another email and communication from us, I would say, in the next few days. And we thank everyone so much for participating.
I'd like to add my both thanks for not only being here, but being so well-prepared and gracious. We got through that very effectively, and it's a very positive comment on all of you. Thanks a bunch. And with that, I think we will close.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.